coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Only once in a Thanos thrown moon is there a week like this in pop culture, and we are bringing it all to you.
We're having a spoiler-free discussion of Avengers Infinity War, and we're reviewing Janelle Monáe's latest music and video offering, Dirty Computer.
But wait, there's more. We're also bringing you highlights from the Tribeca Film Festival and lowlights of Kanye letting loose on Twitter, and, of course, the big sell. It's all happening right now on Inside Pop. Hello, I'm Sean David Johnson, and I am a dirty computer.
And I am Amita Patel, and I am living a crazy classic life. And this is your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
Inside pop.
What a world we live in.
It's a good pop culture world today.
I'm just saying, I'm loving this pop culture world right now.
Well, let's start off with some big pop culture, gigantic pop culture news, Avengers Infinity Wars. It was all leading up to this, 19 films and more than $15 billion in box office receipts. The MCU franchise gave comic book fans thrills they never imagined they'd experience, and it let the rest of the world know the joy of rooting for superheroes who were as flawed as they were brave. And now, Avengers Infinity War has arrived, and it has almost everyone cheering and wiping away a few tears. And it's one of the darkest movies that I, in my little nerdy life, have ever seen.
That's some strong words right there. That's some really strong words.
Yes. Let's reiterate. No spoilers. So we're not going to talk about why people were weeping and cheering. But I think suffice to say that across the board, everyone's talking about how frigging dark this movie was. And I want to ask you, Amita Patel, you didn't grow up reading X-Men and New Mutant comics and Avengers comics and Black Panther comics, but you've become a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So without spoilers, just let me know, did this movie meet your expectations?
I will have to say I didn't really, because I don't know the comics and everything, I didn't really know what I was expecting. I just was expecting a whole lot of superheroes. As we discussed when we saw the trailer, there's too many to pack into one movie. Will I get enough of everybody? And so I kind of like knew there was a war, but I didn't really like... I didn't like fully understand that, you know, war is happening and there's going to be a lot of fighting and a lot of, you know, really terrible, awful fights. So I think my reaction was really just like, oh, right, this is difficult and this is everyone's angry and everyone's upset. And yeah, it was definitely a tough one. It was a tough one.
This is war. Yeah, it's funny when we aren't giving spoilers. And so I think some of my favorite moments I can't discuss with you right now because they're spoilers. But,
right.
You know, I'm going to say, yeah, I had high expectations, although I feel like I have been able to look at these movies as movies and not just as a fanboy. So if, you know, Black Panther is a film, right? And their themes and the yeah. and the costumes mean something and all that stuff. Ant-Man is a fun romp. Ditto Guardians of the Galaxy. So I think each of these movies have served a different purpose. Spider-Man's a teenage comedy mm-hmm. drama, right? And then,
yeah.
you know, and then some of them haven't been as great. So I feel like I can be kind of objective. And I don't know. I feel like Infinity War is almost... Since they didn't screw it up, it's almost review proof. But and I think that, like, the thing for me, my biggest takeaway was it was also meta that I couldn't. That I think they were just having fun with it. So, for example, Chris Pratt's character Star-Lord, there's probably about 45 seconds where they're talking about how he's gained weight, and that's so meta, and it's, I mean, it's hysterical, and somehow
it's
it worked.
So
it didn't take me out of the movie, but it definitely made me think in the movie that, right, Chris Pratt is that actor who can go from super pudgy to super muscular And he does look a little bit pudgy in this one. Maybe he was doing another role. Like, you start thinking about all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was funny. It was fun. And so that was, so we talked about talking about some of our favorite moments that did not involve spoilers. So that is mine, like these meta moments. So I enjoyed that one. What about you? Oh, did you have any favorite moments in the film?
You know, I think it's exactly what you're saying. Like, the fun moments were really great. And it's one of those times where we've discussed this before, when something is so funny that, like, the entire theater laughs and then you miss the next, like, couple lines.
Right.
And you're angry about it because, you know, you wanted to make sure you're continuing with the story. But I love those moments because it means that, you know, they really hit that humor mark really well. So I think some of my favorite moments were really the one-liners or just like the quips from Okoye from Wakanda.
Mm.
She was hilarious in her really like sassy, smart way. And Thor, Chris Hemsworth, my favorite Chris. I just loved all the humor he brought in Thor Ragnarok, and it was just right back in that with this. It's so, so good.
Yeah, I actually read that the Russo brothers, who directed the film, and then there are about three different writers on the film, that basically they wrote Infinity War before Ant-Man, Black Panther, and what other film? Which other one came out last year? Ant-Man, Black Panther, and
Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok, Thor. Thank you, came out.
Yeah.
And they were in constant communication with the filmmakers of those three films. And so, for example, Chris Hemsworth was just delighted at the humor and the comic side he got to show in Thor Ragnarok, that he and the film's director collaborated with them and really changed Thor's story arc slightly to make him more... he was supposed to be the straight man in the Guardians of the Galaxy portion mm-hmm. of the film, but he actually became the, you know, part of the one of the comic foils. So I thought that was interesting. Like, he's got comic chops now, and he wants to show them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. And obviously, like, the box office has responded. It is the biggest movie opening of all, just of the year, and of a lot, I think, of all of these Avenger films. I believe it's been killing it at the movie theaters, which is not a surprise. You put all these superheroes in one film, that's going to happen. Will it get to billion-dollar status? Probably. But I think what I took away from this film is, you know, they are being really smart. They're all sitting there saying, we're going to do this film and we're going to put everybody in it, but we're not going to leave you guys in the place where you are happy or sad. Like, you're going to have a lot of questions at the end of this film. I know I did. And I think it was really interesting watching it with a big crowd, for sure.
Yeah, I sent Amita a text last night. We both saw it Monday night and survived all spoilers, but we saw it in separate theaters in different parts of the city. And I sent Amita a text last night saying that I want about a very specific discussion I want to have in about a month, when we can have a spoiler-filled conversation. So that has to happen. And yeah, and I'll say that my biggest takeaway is that it was just, for me, the directors showed such confidence. They were able to put in some quiet moments. So, for example, not a spoiler, yeah, but the Vision and Scarlet Witch were allowed to have maybe, you know, 60 seconds, 75 seconds of quiet, non-explosion time on screen together at the very beginning of the film. And that was cool. So I think that's confidence. I also think that, like, and also, like, just like the meta stuff I was talking about before, like, it dawned mm-hmm. on me maybe halfway through. I was like, God, Iron Man and Doctor Strange really hate each other. And then I realized, oh shit, it's Sherlock arguing against Sherlock. Like, I completely forgot that both of these actors had played Sherlock Holmes. And I'm sure the directors were like, let's have Sherlock Holmes argue with Sherlock Holmes, because they're both the smartest guys in the room. And so I loved all that stuff. So I'm going to give it, even though I said it's review proof, I'm going to review it. I'll say thumbs up to Avengers Infinity War for its confidence and its humor and its bravery to do certain things that damn movie did.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. 100%. It was really fun. It's funny because when we were getting our popcorn, somebody, the guy who was selling us the popcorn at the theater, said he'd seen it 3 times. And we were just like, wow. And it's only Monday. And so I was just like, you've seen it 3 times in the last weekend that it came out. I was like, really? My question to you is, would you see it again?
Yes, definitely. I would see it again because so much is happening on screen. And I'll say that I wasn't the biggest fan of the action. I felt like the screen many times was too cluttered, right? I don't like why, mm-hmm. you know, they chose to have 40 bad guys on screen battling 12 good guys. What if it were just like, can I have like a little 1-on-1 or 3-on-2? You know, I want to see it because it was really fun, but B, I think I missed a lot, but not in a good way. So I just want to see it again.
Yeah.
You know, maybe sit a little bit further back, but that is one criticism. It's like, there are different ways of doing action sequences. And I think the screen was too cluttered. So that'll be my one critique mm-hmm. of Avengers, but yeah, I'll see it again. I'll wait until a really hot, steamy day during the summer. And I'll just go in the middle of the day in a like empty movie theater. That is one of my summertime pleasures.
That could sound like a different type of summertime pleasure.
Oh, okay. Snap. Yo, I'm talking G-rated people. Come on.
Hey, Chris Hemsworth. How you doing? All right. So feel free, tweet us. Well, actually, don't tweet us. If you would like to talk about Avengers Infinity Wars without spoilers, feel free to tweet us. We want to obviously preserve this for anybody else who hasn't seen it. And be the same. Be good. Don't spoil it for anybody. Like we're not right now.
We're awesome.
All right. Well, another incredible film and album came out this weekend. You've heard us talk about it already quite a bit. Janelle Monáe's Dirty Computer was released on Friday. The Emotion Picture was released on Thursday. There are so many thoughts. There was so much to take in, just musically and then visually. Thank you, first of all, Janelle Monáe, for putting this all together and gifting us with both of these things at once. And I have to say, spoiler full, I love it. Who would have thought that? This is a huge surprise. I loved Dirty Computer. I love it for so many things that I think that it's just, she's so smart. She had so much fun. She's so versatile. You get some really great like themes and different type of musical genres within her music. I felt some really great R&B groove. And then I felt like fun pop rock vibes in different tracks. Just well done. And I know that I'm not surprised that it's well done, but I think I need to just say it's well done. And if you're not a fan of Janelle Monáe, I really think you should take a look at it because it's necessary.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about and unpack with this Emotion Picture video album.
Yeah.
and music album. I'll start with the album. You know, my one fear was that I had listened to the singles she had released so much that I wouldn't be able to listen to the album as a whole, because I think my feeling was that she intended it to be an album that you listen to from start to finish. And it definitely is, because did you notice, Amita, how every song seamlessly goes into it? There's no gap on the album.
Yeah.
It is meant to be an album that you listen to. And somehow, even though I've listened to Make Me Feel and Pink and Django Jane, Spotify will tell me at the end of the year, but a lot leading up to the album, I was still able to take a step back and then listen to them within the album. And I think it works really well as a cohesive album. I think musically, I love how they're different kind of genres. I love that a lot of the songs have kind of an 80s feel. I love that some of it's a little mm-hmm. bit punk, some of it's a little bit soulful and R&B, and some of it's just, you know, why try to put a label on it, because it doesn't sound like any particular genre. So I think it's really interesting in that way. And I read something interesting, which I will share with you and the listeners. In one review, which was a very glowing, positive review, it actually mentioned something that I never really considered, which was that Janelle Monáe has never had a hit. Even those singles from Electric Lady, which were amazing, Queen and Electric Lady, none of them ever made it into the top 50 Billboard. This is according to this article. So, and I realized, I mean, I never listened to the radio, so I can't be the judge about how often you heard Janelle Monáe on top 40 radio. But the reviewer said that in listening to Dirty Computer, it sounded like she wanted to make an artistic statement and also get on the charts. So I wanted to ask you what you think about that. Does it sound to you like there are a couple of songs where she's like, give me my top 10 single?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess that's so surprising she hasn't had a hit, because she's a hit in my books. But I think there's a few songs on here that may have felt more aligned to trying to make that hit. But in a weird way, I love her for maybe not even worrying about that. And I think that maybe she did a little bit with songs like Django Jane or Make Me Feel, and, you know, one of my favorites on the album, Crazy Classic Life. But I feel like she was always kind of a little bit more like, I'm an artist, I'm doing this for me, I want to like tell my story. And this album, as everybody probably has already read and heard by now, is really telling her story. She's gotten more personal on this than she has on previous albums, and she's now come out as a queer Black woman, and I'm so excited about that. Congrats. Well done. Not really well done, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's wonderful that you'll be able to share that. You know what I mean? And I think that as a whole, this album, as you said, is very cohesive. I think it's such a great partner to the emotion picture, because there's so much visual, stunning excitement on screen when she performs, and all of the creativity behind the world that she's creating in Dirty Computer. And I think that I like that the emotion picture isn't every single song in full. It's pieces. It's so well thought out. It's not sitting here saying it's a full video for each song. It's they're giving you a piece of one song and then going into a full of another song. You know, there's a real great story that they tell with this motion picture.
Yeah, and there is a plot, right? And Janelle Monáe gets to act again, and Tessa Thompson, who is an amazing actress. Tessa Thompson is such a good actress that it wasn't until I really started becoming obsessed with Tessa Thompson that I realized, oh, you mean the woman who played Valkyrie is also that sweet, tender, but strong woman in Creed? I had no idea. So I think she's great. So she gets to act in the emotion picture as well. And, you know, I'm a sucker for Afrofuturism. So I love how, you know, from the beginning, you know, at first Janelle Monáe was claiming to be an android. And so she would sit down and do interviews, and she would own that. She would say, yeah, so I'm an android from the future, and I've come back to save blah, blah, blah. And you're like, okay, I love that you're owning this, Janelle. She's moved beyond that, and now she is being more personal. But she's still paying homage and celebrating Afrofuturism, which I love, love, love about her. And yeah, I think that it was a different way to do the emotion picture. We really have to do a segment, Amita, on our favorite video albums. I'll put that in quotes. I couldn't help but think of Lemonade, and there are definitely some Lemonade-esque things about it, kind of a group of women doing things together. But it's completely outside of the realm of Lemonade too. Like, she doesn't try to do the same thing that Beyoncé did with Lemonade, but I think she's successful in a very different way. So yeah, from across the board, I love it, and I will say that, yeah, for me, it's one song away from being a perfect album, maybe two songs away from being a perfect album. And I'm not going to tell you what those songs are yet, because I definitely need to listen to an album for a few weeks before it really settles into me. So maybe I'll change my mind. But yeah, I feel like it's such a strong album, and just two songs away from a week in me being able to call it perfect. So that's some.
You know, it's so funny that you said that. Yeah. Because I didn't classify it like that, but I felt it was short. You know, I think there's a few songs on there that are very short, and I was like, oh, it's over. Mm-hmm. And I wanted more, and she left us wanting more, which is great. But I felt the same way. Like I wanted a couple more songs.
Well, you know, better. And what is it? Eight or nine songs. You know, give me a great 40-minute album or 45-minute album as opposed to an album full of filler. Because Lord knows, actually, and we love a lot of artists who give you 12, 13 songs, but not all of them are worth our time, honestly, you know? So yeah, give me a shorter album. And, you know, I'm wondering, what's the name of the song that Pharrell is on? Because that's one of my favorites. That's a banger.
I got the juice.
That's a banger.
I got the juice.
Song. Yeah. So that's one of the songs that only appears as a snippet that you hear it in a car as they're driving. Mm-hmm. I have a theory that, because that is screaming to be a single, I need the remix of that, and I need a full video. So my guess is that maybe like two more singles in, she might release that as a single, and that might get its own video. I hope so, because A, I don't know if we could stand it. Could you stand seeing Janelle Monáe and Pharrell in the same frame? That's too much for
when
you.
When I saw this track, I was just like, wait, what's happening? I can't stand it. I hope it happens. I hope this dream that you have has now been spoken into the universe, that our android, Cindy Mayweather, a.k.a. Janelle Monáe, hears it, puts together the rest of a video from that car ride. And it's not a Pharrell Williams puppet. It is the real Pharrell Williams in the video.
That would...
I'm being real specific, Janelle.
Right. Amita, that would blow your circuitry. Do you know why?
Oh, my gosh.
Because you're a dirty computer.
I am such a dirty computer. And I don't think we explained it, but just so you know, the dirty computer title is Janelle's way of saying that we are dirty computers, that we are all original. We have our own thoughts and our own feelings and emotions, and we should own them, and we shouldn't be criticized for being original. And that is a beautiful thought.
I love that. Amen. I hope all of our listeners are dirty computers.
Shall we just say that now? Hey, dirty computers.
Right, exactly. Well, I think now, I've heard her say it a few times, so you know how Mariah calls her fans lambs, and Janet calls her fans, it's either J-Tribe or Jan-Fam. I'm not a huge fan of either of those.
Is it the J-Tribe? Yeah. And Gaga has monsters, the little and Rihanna monsters. Has a navy.
So I think, oh wait, who has the navy?
Rihanna.
Oh, Rihanna, Riri, I love you. Yeah. Finally. Finally, I found a way to love you.
He's joined the Navy, guys. He's finally joined the Navy.
But I think I've heard Janelle Monáe call her fans fandroids, which I love. And I am a fandroid.
We are fandroids,
so
for sure.
So hard. So, yeah, so listen.
Oh, yeah. We're such fandroids. We're seeing her twice this year, guys.
Mm-hmm. And we're highly melanated.
Can't wait.
All right, so listen, if you've stuck with us and you're not a Janelle Monáe fan, I hope that means that you're open to seeing why we're so giddy about her. If you have listened to Dirty Computer and you like it, I'm going to say just go back chronologically backwards. So if you like Dirty Computer, go back to the most recent album, which is Electric Lady, and then the one before that, and then That's it. Like, she only did three, and I think there was an EP before that. They're all great, but I think the albums get stronger and stronger. So Electric Lady, mm-hmm. and then the first one that had Tightrope on it, which I really like. So I don't know if you agree with that or not, Amita, but just listen to the albums. That's what
I'm saying.
They have. Yeah.
I completely agree. I feel like, I think it was Arch Android, mm-hmm. was her first album, and I think that was a really great, I'm a new artist, I'm bringing you a new sound, and then, the Electric Lady, aka my theme song, a next step up, bringing in more artists like Erykah Badu, and really collaborating with our boy Miguel.
Solange. And Prince.
Solange, yeah.
Prince mm-hmm. on the first song. So, yeah. So check, revel in her greatness like us. All right, so we're going to have so much more. We're talking about Kanye, we're talking about Tribeca, and the results of last week's Big Sell and a new Big Sell. It's all coming up after this very short message.
Hello, are you looking for a new comedy podcast? In which case, can I draw your attention to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast? It's a fictional industry podcast for the beef and dairy industries. It won Best Comedy at the 2017 British Podcast Awards, and it features wonderful guests such as Greg Davis.
To my knowledge, it's the only cow circus that's ever existed in this country. In rural Russia, every small town has a cow circus.
Josie Long.
You should have a beef. Have a beef with them. I have a beef with you. I will have a beef with you. Come round my house. And I'll have a beef with you.
And Andy Daly.
That virus never existed. There was never any such thing as a mad cow disease. That was all an illusion that Big Lamb came up with.
That's the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts from. And I would recommend starting at episode one. Bye.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
We are so excited to discuss the Tribeca Film Festival again. We had a little discussion about some of the documentaries that we saw last week. And the festival has since finished. And it's always such a wonderful event that kind of takes over New York downtown. And we weren't able to possibly go to as many events and see as many films as we wanted to. But we love sharing our experience with you guys. And we have to say, we had, if you've checked out our Instagram stories, we had a really fun podcast Avengers assemble this weekend with some of our podcast friends, Claudia from Long Distance Popcast and Joe from Jogecast. We were able to have a wonderful pop culture brunch with them, filled with lots of fun conversations about music and film and television. And Joe got to join us for a really great one-on-one conversation with Alexander Payne and National Treasure Dick Cavett.
The best phrase. I think you coined that term, National Treasure. So it's the best phrase you ever coined. It was actually pretty cool. I mean, she was in Joe from Jogecast. You hear us rave about that podcast all the time. So one half of Jogecast, Joe was in town, and as luck would have it, it was during Tribeca. As luck would have it, we felt like big shots because we were like, hey, Joe, come with us and our press passes to this Tribeca event. So,
yeah,
you know how I like to feel special. So it was pretty cool. I love this type of talk where it's just two people on stage having a conversation. And it was an interesting pairing. Dick Cavett, he's considered one of the great interviewers of American pop culture. Alexander Payne, one of our great directors, and they're both from the Midwest, right? They're both from, is it Nebraska?
Nebraska, yeah.
Yeah, so they talked about everything. I mean, Dick Cavett is definitely, has a very dry, quirky sense of humor, and I think there are a lot of people in the audience who are just like, is he being serious? Is he okay? But I think Dick Cavett was just like enjoying just being himself. You know, he's probably 80 years old now. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about. And Alexander Payne was obviously a fan and very respectful. And so they talked about, you know, films, their favorite films, friends they had in common. Oh, like Jack Nicholson. And my favorite part of it was Dick Cavett telling stories about these amazing Hollywood legends who he hung out with. Like, he told this amazing story that I've already repeated a couple of times about hanging out with Marlon Brando.
I knew you were going to say that story. That was such a great story.
Yeah. I think sometimes they put this stuff up online, so we'll have to like check out and see if the Dick Cavett Alexander Payne convo is online. It may not be, actually, but yeah, really fun stories, and I love listening to smart people talk. I guess that's why I like podcasts.
Oh. Well, I would say that conversation was unique, to say the least, but also really informative. I think that it was really great to kind of hear Alexander Payne nerd out about films. He had so many films that he discussed being really choice favorites, and I didn't know half of them. And then, you know, so I was like, all right, I got some homework to do to check out some of these films that he feels are, you know, in the top of his list. And what was great, they opened up the room to a Q&A, and, you know, obviously there are a lot of people in that room who are aspiring directors, filmmakers, you know, writers. And somebody had asked him, you know, what advice would you have for me, you know, to get started as a filmmaker or to continue and to, you know, grow as a filmmaker. And he hesitated for a millisecond and he said, just do it. Grab whatever you have and do it. Write it down, get an iPhone, shoot it, just do it. The best way for you to really become a filmmaker is to just get in there. You know, it's almost like get out of your head and just film whatever you want to film. And I thought that was just really smart advice.
Yeah, and it was really exciting with the three of us sitting in the audience hearing it, because we know that Joe and her partner in crime and life, Jay, are working on screenplays, and they talk about that on their podcast and about looking at pop culture from a writing point of view. And they've been doing that. They've been writing, and that's exciting. And I think it's just really inspiring when you know people who are doing that stuff. I used to work with this guy, I don't think you ever met him, but this guy who he was my PA, and maybe an AP, but I would get to work and stop at Starbucks for a coffee, and I would see him there on his laptop, always writing. He was just there every morning, probably an hour before he had to be at work. And then eventually, a couple of years later, I saw his short film, and that's what he was doing. And I think it's like, yeah, just do it and be dedicated about it and work a little bit harder. And that was one of the great lessons that that Alexander Payne and Dick Cavett were attempting to teach. So really inspiring. And I think Tribeca is really inspiring. I think that, you know, it started almost literally from the ashes, not to be too dramatic, but, you know, it was Robert De Niro's way of trying to bring money and people back to downtown after the horror of 9/11. And it's just beautiful that the film festival is going on as downtown has been rebuilt, as we've all recovered as New Yorkers, we've all attempted to recover from that attack. This beautiful thing continues. So it's and I think everyone needs to think about that when they go to Tribeca. It's like, oh yeah, this is why Tribeca is happening, and it's so amazing that art is surviving after all of that. So I love the film festival, and I'm so honored that we get to go for free.
Yeah, no, it was such an honor to go. I'm hoping we're gonna obviously get some more press information about it in the next few days, and I'm gonna eat it all up.
Yeah.
I love this festival, and hopefully I'm hoping we'll be able to do more festivals in the future and be able to engage more with Tribeca next year too. Can't wait.
Word. So I just want to spend a quick moment, Amita, and I would love to hear your opinion on this. Kanye. I want to talk about why I'm not talking about Kanye.
Let's do it.
All right. So if you've been following life in the world, especially on Twitter, so Kanye West has been tweeting recently. He's being very pro-Trump. He's wearing a Make America Great Again baseball hats. He's taking pictures with problematic people. And the reaction to this is obviously extreme. People are making fun of him. People are calling him an Uncle Tom. But then there are other people who are reaching out and trying to help him, like John Legend. And my So in a nutshell, my reaction to all of this is I was tempted to actually tweet something about it from our account. And then I was like, oh, maybe not from our account. I don't want to speak for Mita. I'll do it from my account. And then I stopped myself because of one main thing, which is that in the 2000s, I, you know, worked on a show called Best Week Ever and loved the show. And I think we did a lot of really funny things about pop culture. One of the things we did, though, was probably very consistently had fun with Brittany and Lindsay and their public meltdowns. And I have to say that I feel a little guilty about that looking back, right? Because these were two young women troubled, and they had substance abuse issues later revealed. And I'm sure it'll be later be revealed that they had other issues they were going through. But we kind of satirized. We never tried to be mean-spirited, but we made their problems entertainment. And I feel like in some ways that's what's happening with Kanye. And so I'm not judging anyone for what they comment on. And I feel like some people have the need to comment on it because some stuff he's saying is very hurtful. But for me, I just need to not talk about him, although I'm talking about him now. What do you think about all this?
You know, it's interesting because he has created a reputation for being outrageous, outspoken, in your face, also very, you know, and I don't like, you know, again, it's difficult because you're right. There's something going on with him and you're not sure what to make of it. He's confusing. He's, you know, but when I, the funny thing is that the conversations I've had with people about Kanye in this last week is very much, I mean, he's just got, you know, a couple albums coming out. So that's why he's doing this. And you bring up a good point. You bring up a good point because you don't really truly know if this is something that could be, quote unquote, a mental breakdown or some type of, you know, issue that he's dealing with. Or is it a potential PR machine that Kanye, who is a creative musical genius, in my opinion, I think he's musically extremely talented, and you wonder if this is something that is, you know, a mental break or something happening there, or is it just Kanye starting up the machine again?
Right. Yeah, and you don't know. I mean, it could be some art project where in 2 weeks he reveals, so what I was really doing was commenting on blah, 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 you know, or maybe he's like pushing boundaries in a way that others have pushed boundaries. But yeah, I think there's some people, it's interesting, there's some people who seem hurt by his words, right? Like so there are some people who just feel so betrayed and hurt, right? Like if he went from being the spokesperson for a certain segment of Black America to someone embracing Trump. And I think for a lot of people who care about pop culture and who are invested in his music, probably in a way that I wasn't, I love his music. I think he has done some genius things in music. I'm not emotionally invested in Kanye's music, probably the way a lot of younger people are, but yeah, it's betrayal. I mean, listen, if Annie Lennox all of a sudden started marching for Trump, ugh, I said his name. You know, I would. It would be a horror show for me. But yeah, I think it does make me think about how we do invest our pop culture stars and celebrities and favorite artists with so much.
Yeah, and I think it's so difficult. I'm scrolling through a bunch of his tweets in the last few days. It's interesting. It's difficult, and I wonder where it's going. I do think I lean more towards the machine working towards
interesting
new content coming out.
Okay.
It is what I lean towards. But like I said, I would be also, you know, I think I am a little concerned and will always think hopefully he's okay and he's getting help in the way he needs it if he's not okay.
Well said. Well said. Thank you for helping me deal with those emotions that Kanye has brought up.
All right, well, we'll be back after this short message.
Hey, my name's Jonah Ray. You might have seen me on the latest season of Mystery Science Theater 3000 or heard me on the Nerdist podcast. Well, I got a new podcast that's about 5 years old, but we're moving it over to Max Fun, along with my friend Cash Hartzell.
Hey, everybody.
And my other friend, Neil.
Hi.
Nailed it!
So, it's a music podcast where a lot of people just kind of hang out and talk about music, but so much more. We also take submissions, and so you can hear your band or our music...
Or both.
Or both of it.
You could listen to your band play your music.
Yeah. So tune in, why don't you? You could find out about some new bands and maybe just hear us embarrass ourselves as we drink too much.
Not too much.
Well, it's all perspective, isn't it?
Sure is.
Listen to Jonah Radio on MaxFun.org.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is time now for... The Big Sell.
What, pray tell, is the Big Sell, Sean?
The Big Sell. Let's imagine you wanted to destroy the universe. Right? You're an alien being and you're like, yo, I want to be all powerful and do bad things. How do I do that? And someone comes up to you and is like, hey, I've got a suggestion for you. If you try to gather all 6 Infinity Stones... That might be a way to try to get this done. And you're like, all right, I'll try that and see how it works. On a galactic level, that is what the Big Sell is. It's also about how you and I take turns recommending pop culture to each other.
I love it. I love it. I think we have to get out of the galactic level and get down to Earth and discuss last week's Big Sell.
Feet on the ground. But I will keep reaching for the stars.
Get on the ground. Yes. Last week, you sold me an interesting project.
That I did. Because I'm Prince obsessed. Yes, I asked you to listen to 3 different versions of Nothing Compares to You. The version that was just released from the vaults of Paisley Park, which is Prince, backed by the Revolution. The cover by Sinead O'Connor that everybody knows. And the original version by The Family, which is a Prince protege group, which came out in 1985, I believe. So what was that experience like for you, Amita Patel?
First of all, thank you for this experience. I think Nothing Compares to You is such a beautiful song. And I loved it when you sent me the Rosie Gaines Prince version a while back. And obviously I was familiar, very familiar with the Sinead O'Connor version because that was the first time that I was introduced to that song. So as per your project, you would ask me to listen to them chronologically. And I loved that you did that because it gave me, every single version gave me a different feeling. And I thought that was so unique to Prince's talent and his songwriting and then the talents of each of these performers and the way that they interpreted it. So for the Family version, I felt like I was in church. I felt like there was such gospel to it. It was, and it had these strings. It was orchestral. It felt big and more of like a tribute in a way. For Sinead O'Connor, it felt that it was such longing and there was love lost and it was very sad. And for Prince's version, what I really, really thought was interesting about it was that it felt like it was just a matter-of-fact statement. Nothing compares to you.
Hmm.
That's it. And so listening to those 3 and getting all those different feelings from it was just so, it was so amazing to me. I was like, gosh, you'd think it's the same song. Everybody's just gonna do it. Somebody's going to do it faster. Somebody's going to do it slower. But I got such different feelings from the interpretations and the orchestrations of these songs. So I really, really enjoyed doing that project.
Oh, good. I love that. I love this song so much. And I love The Family. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever mentioned her on this podcast before. But there are a couple of Sinead albums that are perfect, in my opinion. I love her. And, of course, we know how we feel about Prince Rogers Nelson. And I just like comparing how each of the 3 songs deliver, which is maybe the emotional peak of the song, in my opinion, which is the line, but I'm willing to give it another try. All three versions deliver that song and deliver that line in such a different way. It's like, I love how people interpret things differently.
Yeah.
So it's super fun. Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm happy that you did.
And I think what was really it was really unique was that with the Prince version, it was his recording of Nothing Compares to You, but they put it with found footage of Prince rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
And what a treat that was. Oh my gosh, what an incredible performer and hardworking performer. It was just Prince and the Revolution just, you know, just rehearsing over and over again, and Prince doing all these incredible dance moves. And just it seems like you're watching hours of rehearsal because you see so much.
Yeah.
And it, when it's juxtaposed against this song and his interpretation of it, it was so beautiful. And I really enjoyed that. I have a few questions really about after seeing that version.
Mm-hmm.
One, is there more? Will we get more released footage? Will we get another, you know, underground recording? Yes, please. Putting that in the universe.
I hope so.
Give us more. I hope so. And the best question is, what is Princess doing now that they have this newly released rehearsal footage? Are they, if you don't know, Princess, who we had the privilege of seeing once, is a tribute band with Maya Rudolph and her friend Gretchen. I'm forgetting her last name, but she's amazing. And they do this. We got to see them a couple years ago, and they did this. They just do incredible Prince tributes and are so entertaining. And I wonder what they're doing right now watching all of this awesome rehearsal footage.
Getting ready to tour again, I hope. And I love them because they do deep cuts too. They don't just do singles. It's like, oh, yeah, that's the fifth track from Dirty Mind. Okay, Princess, I see you and hear you. So, yeah, I love them. And The Revolution is touring again. So that phenomenal band that is just, I never thought that I would see The Revolution perform again. Sadly, it's without Prince, but it's one of the best bands in rock and roll. I mean, they're such a tight, amazing band, and they would dance and perform music. And listen, if you're in Prince's backing band, you can never hit a wrong note. It's got to be perfection.
No.
Every time you...
Yeah. And you... Yeah. You see that. You see that in that video too. Like they're right on point with Prince, you know, backing him with their dance moves, and you don't hear them playing anything, obviously, because Nothing Compares to You is playing underneath it, but you got to know that those notes are all fantastic. And I was so excited that we got to see them last year, and I love that they're still on tour and still going around. It's great.
So what would you like to rate this Nothing Compares to You listening project?
I'm going to give this a very strong 3.5 stars. It was really, really enlightening to kind of to experience all three versions of this in different ways. So thank you.
You're welcome. What do you have for me this week?
I have an artist that I discovered on Discover Weekly. I know I sound like a broken record, but Spotify, you're so great. You give us a really great, cool musicians I've never heard of, and I thank you for it. I found this artist called Wallace. Her name is Wallace, is I believe from Australia or New Zealand, and she's got this really amazing jazz R&B soul sound that I haven't heard in a while. It's what was so easy, this amazing groove to it. So I wanted to big sell her to you. She had a 6-song EP called Pole to Pole. And there's some really, really... The one track that got me into her was called Neverland. But I've really started to enjoy her sound, and I wanted to big sell her to you.
Thanks. I look forward to checking her out. We'll put the link to that in the show notes so that our listeners can also listen along, play along with the big sell. So that's it for this week. We are so appreciative that you stuck around and listened to us talk about some of our favorite pop culture of the week. Please return the favor and tweet us or leave comments on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. Let us know what you think about this huge week in pop culture, and we'll tweet back. It'll be a dialogue, not a monologue. And you can also find us on Facebook, and you can head to InsidePopPodcast.com. That's where you can subscribe to the show and find out more about us.
Yeah, and just so you guys know, we did talk about how we were really excited about watching Handmaid's Tale. That is to come. There was so much pop culture happening that we weren't able to fit into this episode, but don't you worry, we will be talking about Handmaid's Tale in the future.
We promise. And you can also head over to MaximumFun.org to check us out alongside a great group of other podcasts. We are part of that amazing network, and it's all about comedy and culture over on MaximumFun.org.
And of course, we'll be back next week with more of the TV, film, music, and all the pop culture you can handle right here every Wednesday on Inside Pop. Have a great week, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.